I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Today, people across the nation observed a minute of silence in memory of those who died a week ago in Newtown, Connecticut. In many communities, bells tolled 26 times in honor of the children and educators who were gunned down at the Sandy Hook School. That was at 9:30 this morning. An hour and 15 minutes later, the National Rifle Association broke its near silence since the shooting. The country's most powerful gun lobby came out with a proposal to put armed guards in all of the nation's schools. Wayne LaPierre is the NRA's executive vice president.
The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
The NRA has long been an influential voice on domestic gun laws and policies, and has been reaching out to influence policy on an international level as well. The World's Arun Roth has been looking at the NRA's international interests. When did the NRA start to go global, Arun?
It was around the mid-90s when the United Nations was becoming interested in regulating the small arms trade. Small arms are something that caught the attention of the NRA, and they thought that there might be potentially restrictions on domestic trade. So that was when they registered as an NGO so they could lobby the UN, also took part in forming an international group called the World Forum on the Future of Sport Shooting Activities. This is a group, an umbrella group, that comprises organizations like the NRA in countries around the world.
And they actually have made their presence felt in other countries.
Yeah, in Brazil and Canada in particular, the NRA and their advisors helped defeat a 2005 referendum in Brazil that would have been a substantial gun control measure. And in Canada, they've been involved with lobbying, strategizing, helping them also work towards loosening gun restrictions.
So what exactly is the complaint then of the NRA and the World Forum about the treaty at the UN?
Well, they believe that because civilian weapons are mentioned, there could be a regulation registration regime that would come in and involve them. I spoke with Natalie Goldring, who's at Georgetown, a senior fellow with security studies there who follows the small arms trade. She said that there is nothing in the treaty to indicate that. This is a clip from her talking about that. And then Thomas Mason, who's the executive secretary for the World Forum on the Future of Sport Shooting Activities, and his response to her take.
The U.S. government has been as clear as it possibly could be that the private acquisition of weapons and the private ownership of weapons will not be covered by an arms trade treaty. They make it clear that the NRA simply isn't telling the truth.
Well, again, that's just simply not true, that the treaty scope includes all firearms. And a lot of countries on the floor of the United Nations have stated that specifically. There's been a huge debate over whether or not the treaty should include civilian firearms, and so far we've been on the losing side of that debate.
Again, that was Thomas Mason speaking there, a lobbyist for the World Forum on Sport Shooting Activities. Arun, what will happen with this small arms treaty at the UN going forward now?
What happened in July was the U.S. ended up asking for a delay to further work on the language, and a lot of observers, including Natalie Goldring at Georgetown, say that was because of the election season. The U.S. did not want to have this fight then. So it's basically been postponed. They'll pick it up in March, possibly with a new atmosphere right now, both with the shootings in Connecticut and President Obama having a second term. It might be a different scenario.
The World's Arun Roth. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Marco.